This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. So I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark.
Yeah, there it is. When that robot voice comes in, you know it is time to begin. And wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Woo! Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. Or hey, maybe you're at the grocery store, maybe you're running some errands, maybe you're popping in the car, popping out. Whatever the case, we're going to be in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free. Thanks to our patrons at patreon.com/DLCpod. Our patrons, those beautiful, wonderful people, make this show possible. They support us. And in exchange, they get cool perks, including ad-free versions of the show, video versions of the show on demand, and a whole bunch of bonus content exclusive to them. Extra shows that they get to enjoy whenever they please, including multiple seasons of Feeling This, the show where Christian Spicer and Alex Solomon talk about the feelings behind video games. The new season coming soon. I saw that prompt go up on the patron feed asking for topics. Woo! Got to get in there if you're a patron. Got to be a patron if you aren't to experience it. But that's not all. We also have the Wednesday paid DLC program where Lana Bashinsky joins us to talk about the stuff the patrons want to talk about. Prompts going up every week for that as well. It's a very interactive experience being a patron. Get in on it. Support the show. Make sure it continues at patreon.com/DLCpod. But this show, the main show, DLC, that's the show all about games in their many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles. Also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, the spell with two N's and one T. And I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who's rooting for those Rockets tonight, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone. By the time you are listening to this, it will be too late.
Yeah.
Either Jeff or I will owe each other kind words, which
it's difficult. Oof. That's a hard ask.
Yeah, really. Like, I'm about to go suit up and shoot some for the Rockets if they need it, because I am not saying kind words about I can't even do it right now, you know.
We are recording this episode during game 7 of the Warriors Rockets series that we have friendly wagered with each other on. I did not think it would get to a game 7. I did not like the fact that it got to a game 7. I was planning to be gloating by now. And here we are, gloat available.
At least this week is like a light news week and just like you don't have much else to talk about, you know. So
there is so much to dig into, so much huge news, you know, news about the biggest video game in the last 10 years easily, and so much more to get to, games that we've been playing, games that that we can't even talk about yet. There's so much to get into. And we have an awesome guest to do all of that with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm excited because DLC also stands for your downloadable Cogswell. Because we have editor at GameSpot, Jessica Cogswell, joining us for the first time. Hey, Jessica, how are you?
Hi, I am fantastic. I'm better now just since this podcast has started. I feel like there's such like an infectious like spirit and just energy. So already I'm like, I brought down tea because we're recording this kind of late. And I'm like, I'm just going to sip. And now I'm like, I don't know if I need that. I'm good. I'm feeling all right.
We are the Earl Grey of podcasts. That's what we like to say. We like to call ourselves. Delighted to have you on the show. And we got so much to dig into. So let's get right to it and start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. But that's not the only way to get our attention or to participate in this community. You can also head over to Discord. We're on Discord with a thriving group of folks hanging out, talking games and all sorts of other stuff. The Discord is 5x5 DLC on Discord. A great place to hang out and talk all sorts of cool stuff. But Jessica, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Ooh, it's a tough one this week. A lot happened. I don't know if you all know this, but a lot happened. Some of which affected me like personally at work, which is going to be interesting. I think that for me, the one that I would consider most impactful is probably the Xbox price increases. I think that that's not entirely unexpected.
Wait, decrease is what you meant, right? Because console prices go down?
Usually several years into their life cycle, they would go down in a normal, not topsy-turvy world, I suppose.
Yeah. Not a decrease? We're not getting the PS2 Slim that's $99 that hit that sweet spot of pricing? No.
No, sir. Nope. Oh. We got an announcement this week that due to conditions of the rising cost of development and market conditions, this tariffs, ladies and gentlemen, it's tariffs. This is the Trump tax that's being added to your Xbox paraphernalia. If you haven't gotten a Series X or S and you live in the world, because this is worldwide, this is a global price increase, you're going to be paying more. Not just for the systems, which are going up $100, at least here in the United States. $499 for the Series X is going up to $599, and the Series S is going...
Hold on. $100.
Yeah.
$100. It's a four-and-a-half-year-old console.
Yep.
And it's going up.
20% increase.
$100.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
That's not a small amount. And not, you know, it's not exactly the market leader in consoles either, which is interesting. You know, Xbox is doing what they can to compete. And this is still something they have to do, but that's not all. Also peripherals are going up. Controllers are going up, and the base price of their first party games, their major AAA games, are going up. $80 is going to be the new price. We kind of already saw that with Switch 2 pricing. Everybody was saying, oh, $80. Is that the new industry standard? Well, yep. The new industry standard is $80. Xbox is embracing that. So, Jessica, tell me how, obviously, we live in tumultuous times and everything's getting more expensive just to exist, to breathe this delicious air that we've got. But tell me what this means for Xbox and the video game industry as a whole from your perspective.
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's interesting because if I had to pick which of like the big three, right, that I would expect to raise console prices, it would not have been Xbox because their thing is software I'm less surprised by, but their thing to me has always been having a slightly lower barrier of entry, but they also have like Game Pass, right? They have the subscription services where that's kind of something that's enticing about their ecosystem. So I think it's kind of unexpected. I mean, it's interesting because I say it's unexpected, but I think I started this with saying it's not crazy, but I don't know. It's something that you can foresee happening, but I don't think I actually expected it to happen or it to happen this quickly. And it's a pretty significant price increases. Like, I think the smallest one is that $80 jump with the Series S, right?
Yeah.
But it's still almost $100. And then having that $80 price tag for games too. I mean, that's just, it's going to be interesting this holiday season. Cause I mean, it starts like right around then too, when people are going to be shopping for Christmas presents and what have you. And people are already struggling to buy eggs, as we all know, you know, like interesting.
It's really unfortunate. We talked a lot, of course, about the higher price for Switch 2 that was sort of a unexpected jolt when that was announced, and the games being more expensive. And it does seem like we're going to get $80 games being the sort of standard for AAA. However, there's been a lot of reporting this week, folks pointing out that the highest rated games across Metacritic right now in the last, you know, several months are all budget title games, you know, games like Clair Obscur, games like Blueprints, these games that are not the games that would typically get a $80 price point. These are not the Calls of Duty of the world. These are not the Grand Theft Autos of the world. These are the games that are getting the most, sort of, at least critical acclaim and buzz. And there's more variable pricing now than there ever has been to a certain extent. Other people speculating that this actually sweetens the deal for Xbox Game Pass from a certain perspective. Do you take any stock in that notion, Jessica, that In a weird way, this is kind of shrewd of Microsoft to make the value proposition of their subscription service even more attractive?
I think so. I mean, whether or not it's, you know, like a conscious decision, which I'm sure it is, because I'm sure there are enough people who are talking about all this to where it's like, yes, that is also a slight net positive. I don't know if it's necessarily the reason for the rollout, because I don't know. It's hard to say whether or not the tariffs are causing this to be a necessity, right? And that's kind of the thing that we're going to see as, you know, in the coming months are these places that are having these, tariff, and like how much of that is genuine and how much of that is also going to be places kind of price gouging, because that's going to be a new expected thing, right? There's a part of me that really feels, though, that Microsoft would not have raised the price for the hardware if there wasn't an actual, like, if they were not hemorrhaging in a way that cannot happen for the company. It just doesn't really seem like their style. I'm not trying to be like pro business because, you know, that's not to say they don't have other practices they're always trying to make money. Right. But at the same time, I think that this decision must come from a place where they are really feeling the ramifications of tariffs and the cost of developing the console.
Yeah. I mean, it's hitting every industry, obviously. There's a lot of uncertainty, as we all know, around it. And, you know, these tariffs are certainly real, and they certainly impact electronics as much as anything else. So I can only imagine, manufacturing overseas, which is undoubtedly how the Xbox is being manufactured, is subject to those, you know, very exorbitant taxes that the administration is imposing. So, I think that may be we able to sort of differentiate that between the game price and the hardware price, maybe able to split a hair there. Christian, I know that you predicted Xbox Game Pass would go up this year. Do you think that's the next domino that's going to fall? Is that the subscription price will also go up?
I do. I don't know if it will necessarily be this year anymore. I don't know to what extent. Or maybe they announced this now so that come August, they can announce the bump in the Game Pass price as well. But if games are, per them, more expensive to develop now, you can't keep giving that same amount of games away, quote unquote, in Game Pass when it wasn't a moneymaker for you before. You know, it wasn't this huge profit driver in and of itself. I think, and Jessica, I think, kind of hit on this. I think where Xbox is perhaps positioned better than inevitably when Sony does this as well, or whatever the next, you know, shoe to drop is there, this is an Xbox campaign. Like, yes, they're raising the price of the Series X and the Series S and of games, but for whatever it is, $19 a month or whatever it currently is right now, you can be Game Pass Ultimate subscriber, and on your Samsung or LG TV, you already have xCloud built into that. There is an Xbox app. So it costs you nothing more. You don't need to buy the now $600 Series X, the 4.5-year-old $600 Xbox Series X, because you have cloud gaming available to you on your TV. And that will just be the way people get into the Xbox ecosystem. I think for me, what this, these price increases because of Trump's tariffs do, and now the game cost increase as well because of development costs or whatever you want to attribute those to, I think that this will push more and more people into the already very popular free-to-play forever game style ecosystem where, you know, next Xbox game might be $80, but Fortnite is still free to download. And I think there is something about the way the human brain works where you look at $80 and you're like, oh, that is expensive. But then you spend $5 every week on Fortnite, a bad example, but whatever your, you know, the battle pass is, and then plus Fortnite crew, and then plus the occasional skin. And you're like, you know, I don't mind doing that. And it's kind of nickeling and diming yourself well past that $80, but it feels different. It feels better to the consumer. And I think we're going to see more studios perhaps look to take that swing like Sony already did and struggled with. But that an $80 price point is so big. I mean, I know we saw those numbers in the 90s with SNES games and stuff like that, but it is a different marketplace right now. This idea of games being for everybody, so to speak, at $600 consoles and $80 games, that's not for everybody. That is an expensive hobby if you're trying to play the latest and greatest. And so maybe we'll see more people just, you know, jumping on sales, you know, living in that late to play, wait for it to go down in price era. But I mean, nothing about this, I think, is good for our hobby in terms of making it feel welcoming, I guess, is the way I'll put it.
Well, I mean, I think I think the silver lining you have already pointed out, which is there's never been a time where there's been more variable ways for you to play something, right? And the number of older games that get discounted, subscription services, you know, getting on Steam and getting a great indie game that's value priced. There's you know, when you talk about the 90s having very high sticker price for games relative to their, you know, inflation levels, there was also fewer games coming out in total, right? We just have this massive glut of things to play all the time. And, you know, there, that's in one sense very good in that there's always options, and the quality level is so much higher than it ever was. You know, then, but there are these large games that are soaking up a lot of the attention, soaking up a lot of the dollars, and they're going to soak up more of those dollars, right? Because the big whale games, you know, the Call of Duties, the Grand Theft Autos, are still going to sell, right? People are still going to pay the premium to get the big AAA amazing game, but there's going to be, I feel like there's going to be a squeeze on the games that don't break through, and there's going to be fewer people that are going to take a risk on an $80. I don't have a great example in my head, but you know, an $80, you know, AAA game that's unproven.
Ratchet and Clank, a game I love. So I'm not trying to throw Ratchet and Clank under the bus, but it's like, here's this really great single player. Or Astro, I think Astrobot actually launched cheaper, but like...
Yeah, I was going to say Astrobot is the first thing that I thought of, because it's like, yeah, you look at Astro, if for in a world where Astrobot was like $80, right? If you have a game like Astrobot and then you have Grand Theft Auto 6, oh, there's no way that people would choose, like, you're going to go with like the big AAA hard hitting, you know, or even like the Call of Duties, right? You want something that's reliable, that you can put a lot of hours into, from like a franchise that you know and love. It's interesting, because I feel like both of you have really nailed it, that I think that it is going to kind of, there's going to be a divide. It's going to be some people who maybe they normally would buy 6 new games a year or something like that. Maybe now it's like 3 new games. Yeah, and so it's going to be more competitive in like the AA and AAA spaces. And then I do also think that you are going to see more, and we already are seeing more interest in like indies and lower budget games. And I do think I completely agree with you, Christian, that I think it's very likely that Xbox will raise prices this year for Game Pass. And if you look at it, it's like I haven't had Game Pass in a while, just because, you know, I'm privileged enough to like work in press, right? So I get a lot of copies of games, but I realized that there were just so many games on Game Pass that I wanted to play that I either like didn't grab a code for or whatever. And I was like, I'm just going to sub for like a couple months just because like I need to hit up Indiana Jones. Like I, you know, my husband and I have both been playing Blueprint simultaneously. So it's like he can play on the PlayStation. I can play on the Xbox with Game Pass. Claire Obscure also is same deal. He's been playing on PlayStation, so I've been playing on Game Pass. And like there are so many. Oh, Oblivion too. Oblivion is on there. And there's just a lot of like absolutely fantastic games.
South of Midnight, really... Avowed.
Yes. You know, another one. Yeah.
I feel like it really, we have said it, as has everyone, that, you know, Game Pass is an incredible value for your dollar. Mm-hmm. More so now than ever. But I do fear what you guys are both predicting, that it'll keep crawling upward. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's an upper bound to making the case for Game Pass. You know, if we get to the like $30-$35 a month range, it's like, ooh, I'm going to have a hard time recommending that to folks. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. You know, we're talking about, you know, getting into, you know, trivial choice to purchase.
I wonder what that calculus is of, it's the cost of buying X number of games per year. You know, I wonder if there's a way that people frame it like that in their head, or if it's more important to be the, I don't really notice it on my credit card each month, where that line is. Cause if most games are $80, most games that are on the service that you want to play launch at $80 a month, I mean $80 at release, then is $40 a month $35 a month, and you want to be playing those new games?
It's rough, man.
It's expensive, but like, you know, how many games are people buying? And then I also wonder, and Xbox must have this data of like, how many people are playing Forza Horizon 5 still on Game Pass? A game I love. I think it was our game of show the year it came out. I know it just launched on PlayStation. Fantastic game, but like those older, awesome, mm-hmm, Game Pass catalog games, how important are those to folks when they sign up, that they keep going back to them? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a good question. Because I almost think that stuff like that is probably initially not what would draw people, right? But what I think would happen more often than not, just because I can sometimes be like this, as I just said, and I know people who do the same thing, is you don't necessarily go into it with this idea of like, I'm going to subscribe for a year, right? It's like, ooh, you know, I could buy that $80 game that just came out, or I should just sub for a month. And like, I could totally beat that game in a month for $20. So essentially there, Microsoft is making a sell at 1/4 of what they would have made that they otherwise wouldn't have gotten that $20. They wouldn't have gotten the $80, but now they have somebody. And then once they finish that game, let's say in 2.5 weeks, now they can browse around and they're like, ooh, I could start something new. And then they start something new and they're like, oh, I want to continue this. Or I know that they're about to get this game. And then it kind of keeps going. Or maybe they're an on and off subscription. And I mean, either way, that's money that that person probably would not have spent if they were thinking about it intentionally. But it's really easy to when you already are kind of hooked in like that.
I think it's a great point. I think it's a great point. And I call that the Ubisoft Connect version, which is, I'll subscribe to Ubisoft Connect for a month.
Exactly.
You're right. You're right. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. But as of right now, if you didn't get an Xbox Series and you wanted one, it's going to be costlier around the world. All right. It's time for us to take a quick break. We'll be right back after these messages from our sponsor. This episode of DLC is brought to you by MSI's latest motherboards, the Intel Z890 and the B860. Christian, we got to tell folks about the joys of building your own rig. There's nothing like it. And there's so many people I know that will pay a premium for a pre-built computer because they don't think they can do it. But it is so fun to build your own PC. And let me tell you, you can do it, especially with the MSI Z890 and B860. These motherboards are fun to build with, right?
Well, that's the thing. You say that it's fun to build your computer. Not always. If you have great parts you're building with, then yes, it's wonderful because you have things like easy debug LEDs. So you know if you messed up and you're aware of a potential issue before you're like, turn it on. Yeah. Here comes the DeLorean. Fire the lightning. You know if you're making mistakes along the way. And you can, I don't know, build it with one hand. Not that you should be eating while you build your computer, but you could be if you want to be, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, when I was young, a young whippersnapper trying to build PCs, boy, it was a nightmare. You had tools. You had to have knowledge. You
like
know,
a Dexter kill room. You know, you had to like build out this special space. Roll out your little doctor's kit.
These MSI motherboards, like you said, have one hand assembly. This means that you can install the motherboard into your case with ease. These are designed to support single-handed installation with a pre-installed IO shield. And then they've got these one finger installation features on the motherboard itself that require zero tools, right? So you put in the like M.2 SSD, you put in the PCIe cards, you can upgrade, you can swap things in and out easily without a hassle, without the need for tools. Everything has been thought through. They've even got on the, you know, on the software side, they've got this user-friendly BIOS that's easy to navigate. It's intuitive. You can tune your computer. You can set things up clearly and easily. You don't have to have a computer science degree to build with these great motherboards. And they are offering 5% off on the Intel Z890 and B860 motherboards when you go to us-store.msi.com and use the promo code MSIPOD. The cool thing about this is that this is a stackable discount. So you can stack that 5% off promo code with MSI's ongoing promotions, which give you up to $120 in Steam codes. That's on top of the motherboard discount. So this is a perfect deal for gamers if you want to get a new rig, get yourself up and running, ready for all the great stuff that's coming down the pike PC-wise, and have $120 in Steam codes that you can redeem and get yourself some games to play on that killer new rig. MSI is committed to gamers and PC builders. These are built for enthusiasts. They're engineered to meet the needs of gamers and content creators. They offer high quality performance, durability, and cutting edge features. Plus, MSI supports the custom PC and gaming communities by providing not just products, but also resources and tools to make building easy and rewarding. You can do it yourself, and it's fun. You'll feel proud of it. You built this thing, the beast that can play all your favorite games. Get 5% off the Intel Z890 and B860 motherboards by going to the MSI US store. That's us-store.msi.com and the promo code MSIPOD. Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
Man, there's so much stuff here. Big stuff. But I think the stuff that I want to talk about because of its future implications for how it changes potentially the entire industry, especially considering what we talked about in terms of subscription games or free-to-play games or where people are playing games in general. We got an update on Apple v. Epic, and Epic is winning. Epic has
out of
survived.
Nowhere, a chair to the head. You thought it was the twist that no one saw coming. Everybody thought Apple was winning. There was the 1, 2, 3, and he kicked out, and then a chair to the head.
Apple was building, and everybody thought they were going to build their way to the win. But then, no, Epic, no scope, headshotted from across the map outside the circle. Their health was being depleted by Apple's war chest.
Oh, so, sure. You're going to use an on-brand analogy, whereas I'm
– No, you were doing WWE 2025.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's
yeah, you're doing
a video game. Yeah.
Video game analogy of it as well. The short version is – Apple needs to open up the App Store in an even bigger way, allowing apps that you download within the store to have very public and prominent ways for people to subscribe or pay money
buy stuff
to that app, not within Apple's ecosystem. So, for example, you subscribe to Spotify. You use the Spotify app on your phone that you downloaded through Apple's App Store. You open that app. It can say, hey, subscribe, you know, upgrade to premium or whatever. Before, when you would push that button, that would be an in-app transaction. Apple would get a 30% cut of that transaction. And so what a lot of apps would do in this prior workaround that had kind of been set up where Apple was kind of trying to dance around the requirements of what they had to do is Spotify could say, hey, subscribe to premium, push this button. I'm making up a number here, $20 a month on iOS, or go to spotify.com/premium where it will only be $17 per month because you won't have to pay the Apple tax. Or if you're on Patreon and you want to subscribe on Patreon, you do it within the app. It's more expensive if you do it in the app than if you go to, I don't know, patreon.com/DLCpod.
And now, by the way, just real quick, public service announcement. It has already changed. So if you want to subscribe to this here podcast in the app on your iPhone, you can now do it without having to pay an extra 30%, which is pretty great.
Yes. Patreon and Spotify were two of the first out the gate that I saw that were like, we did it. Updated.
Yeah.
Do it. And not only do they have those call to actions or points of sale or whatever it is, they are required that they can't. Oh, what's the term? It wasn't like hide it, but it needs to be as equal as within the App Store. And the judge in this case came out swinging and said Apple was lying. They weren't following prior orders. What they were doing wasn't good enough. And they needed to immediately comply with these changes. It wasn't a 60-day notice, a 30-day notice. It wasn't any of that stuff. It was an immediate comply. This needs to happen now. And we saw the changes go into effect. And for something like Epic, who's been having this battle with Fortnite on the App Store, this is huge. Epic has now also said they're going to launch their own store. If Apple agrees to these changes right now worldwide, Epic will drop their lawsuit. Epic Store will be out. You can have your apps on the Epic Store, blah, blah, blah. Potential to be massive for the world of gaming.
There's going to be hundreds of stores. It's going to be a gold rush of stores. Everything is going to have stores. And, you know, in a lot of ways, this is a very positive thing, certainly for developers who've been kind of suffering under this 30%, you know, Apple tariff, if you will, that siphons 30% of their fee over to Apple just off the top, and there's no way to get around it. However, I am curious if there's going to be a dark side to this, that whatever, you know, bastion Apple was, whatever barrier they put up preventing the Wild West from happening on the App Store is now gone. And you're going to have links in apps that are going to yank you out of the App Store and take you to who knows where, doing who knows what, asking you for how, who knows how much. Am I crazy? What do you think, Jessica? Am I crazy for worrying about that?
No, I don't. I don't think you're crazy at all for worrying about that. I mean, it's that's kind of the nature of all this stuff, right? Like, everybody is vying for our attention and for our money. So it's like any way and any method in which they can try to get the larger share of that is going to happen. And I think it's definitely something to follow, because I think it's too early to tell at this point. Something that I keep thinking about with this too, because I have a lot of friends who stream and stuff like that on Twitch. And I know that Twitch is one of those services where for the longest time, and they even raised the prices last year too, it costs more if you're subbing on mobile than it does if you're subbing at your desktop. And that's something that they put in there for because of the Apple Store. Yeah. And they raised it last year, last summer, I believe, another dollar because of the Apple Store. And so I'm interested if we're going to see certain things like roll back also, or if that's just going to be kind of quietly stay in existence. I don't know. There's a lot of things to definitely keep an eye on as all of this plays out. It's interesting because it really was kind of radio silent in regards to all of this until earlier this week, just bam, people are talking about it again. Some movement's happening. It's wild.
Yeah, Christian, I'm curious how you view this, because I've only seen the reporting being very positive, but from the point of view of developers, like, oh, developers aren't going to have to give this 30% cut to Apple. And I'm certainly sympathetic to that. And I'm happy for the developers not having to, you know, suffer under that huge, huge fee. That's a lot. 30% is nothing to be sneezed at. But I'm wondering if you see this as a positive thing, or if, you know, this kind of darker side to it is justified to worry about.
I think it's very justified to be worried about. I think a lot of the reason why Apple has built the fan base it has in the United States is the safety and reliability of its device. You know, the top debt, we make the hardware, we make the software, everything in the App Store, and there's always exceptions, but it's going to work. You have all your subscriptions. Yeah, you have all your subscriptions in one place. You don't need to keep track of, like,
right,
where was that Game Pass sub? How do I cancel that?
That's
all
right.
Of that stuff. You can just go into the, you know, your account on your iPhone. You can see all of them. You can cancel them. You can renew them. One click. It doesn't launch you to another payment system. And now I think the opportunity for nefarious actors increases. Now I get it. Dear Android user, you're emailing us right now at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Subject line, Christian's an idiot. Like, this has worked.
We get so many of those.
So
emails.
Many of them. So many of them. So many of them. Usually they just say, just kidding. I just wanted to get your attention, Jeff. Actually, you suck. Which is a sweet reverse.
I always respond when I get those emails. You have to be more specific.
I mean, this is largely how Android has worked since inception, you know.
Yeah, right.
But I do think it creates an opportunity for the various actors to do bad things, or even companies to do company things and make it harder and more annoying to unsubscribe to something. Make
it's
it more
Wild West
to jump through.
Yeah.
Yes. And I also think this is a dangerous door that's perhaps been kicked open. And this ruling didn't get into this. And in Europe, I believe they've explicitly kept this consoles out of this argument. But when you sell a game on the PlayStation Store or the Xbox Store or on Steam, that digital storefront is getting a cut. Also, when you buy an item at Best Buy or Target or Nordstrom, that store is making money on that sale. They buy it at wholesale, and then they charge what they're going to charge, and they get that money. And those stores, you know, the reason why you want to have your app on the App Store is because of the stuff that Apple did to make it an appealing place to shop. Just like the reason why you're going to go shop at Dick's Sporting Goods, which is just fun to say because it's called Dick's, is because of the goods they have, the brand they've curated.
Right.
And so I'm just very curious to see what these other digital storefronts will be if or when they become big enough. That's like, no, you're not allowed to charge you know, a surcharge on the thing you're selling. And then it's not even a bunch of stores. It's literally everything is its own store. And I don't know if that's good, Jeff. I don't know if that's good.
It makes me curious how consumers will kind of ultimately react to that, though, because I think that there will probably reach, if that's the case and that's how things play off or play out, I think it will reach kind of a boiling point where people start to spend less money because they don't want to deal with the hassle of like, oh, okay, now I need to have like a BattleNet account, for example, right? Like I have to have this account for this thing and I have to use their in-game thing. Whereas like, oh, it's so like, I'm somebody who doesn't play a ton of mobile games, but there's been times when like I'll get into one and it's so easy to buy stuff. You know what I mean? Like to not even think about it and be like, oh, well, it's only $3.99 to buy this like starter pack or whatever for this game. And it gives me so many cool things. Face ID, double click, you're good. And like the ease is not going to be there if all of these companies kind of do that. So at a certain point, like when will frustration with like all of these different interfaces and frustration at the lack of ease that used to exist, when will that become a barrier? Then it will become less enticing for developers to use their own thing versus just stick with what Apple offers.
Yeah, I think it's an absolute double-edged sword because on the one hand, I totally get it. 30% is restrictive to a degree that it is strangling certain small developers, not just in the gaming space, but all over the place. You know, it's wild how much of any transaction fee goes to Apple. Like, for example, I'm on Cameo, right? I sell limericks on Cameo, cameo.com/Jeff Cannata. The amount of money I actually receive from the fee that the people are paying on Cameo through the iOS app is ridiculous. I there are some Cameo transactions that I will make 50% of what they paid. 50%. So half of what they think they're giving to me, I'm not getting. And, you know, that I'm just a little small little fish there. And this is happening across every app, every game, everything that's happening in the App Store. So I totally understand how this is a huge victory to a certain respect. But on the other hand, I'm really worried because I know what the experience is like. For example, on my Roku, when I've got subscriptions to all these different services, and some of them are through the Roku, some of them are on the individual thing. It is a nightmare, like figuring it all out. Who am I paying a fee to? Where is what, you know, monthly, where is it coming from? What's it all adding up to? If I want to cancel something, oh no, you got to talk to that provider individually. Has nothing to do with, you know, I'm using the Roku to watch all the different streaming apps, but it's all filtered in through different means. And like you said, Christian, it's really nice. And this is just one small aspect of it, but it's really nice to look at the App Store and see, here's all the fees that I pay a month, right? Here's all the things that I've bought on my phone in total right there in one place. And oop, do I want to, you know, cancel that one thing or dispute that charge or whatever I need to do? It all happens through Apple, not through, you know, whatever weird developer did that weird thing that I accidentally subscribe or whatever it is. You know, it worries me a little bit.
The part of this that I think confuses me, or not confuses me, but I think an extra wrinkle to it is that right now, the way things are set up, again, not legal advice, blah, 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 is that you are still getting the app via the App Store. So it's not full side loading yet, right? Which in Europe, they do have other stores that you can download and then get apps. And I think that is where this is going. And that adds even another later wrinkle. But right now it's like you're still getting the app through the App Store. And then within that now app, Apple has to allow someone to make an external purchase or have their purchase be linked outside of the App Store. And so I think the way that is different from something like Steam is that when you buy something on Steam, Valve gets a cut. And now, I guess if you were to download a free game on Steam and then wanted to pay to unlock the full experience, is Steam open and letting you do that directly through the developer without doing that charge through Steam, where Steam would get a cut? That's what I think is interesting about this, is that at what point does Apple say, no, your app can't be on our store because we're not going to put you on the store if we're not getting money from you. Just go be your own app.
I mean, is it
somewhere
that
people then need to download?
Aren't you describing Spotify? Like, it's free for me to put Spotify on my phone. If I want to pay for Spotify and I can do it directly to Spotify, does Apple get any money for that in this new paradigm?
No, but you still have to download the app through the App Store. You can't download the app some other way.
That's what I'm confused by, is that, like, that's like saying I went to Best Buy and I bought my toaster, or they gave me the toaster for free, and this is a terrible analogy. I'm trying to pull it out of my butt, but I need to buy bread from a completely different store, so Best Buy doesn't get any of my toast money. You know what I mean? It's a terrible analogy.
Yeah, I get what you're saying though. Like what Christian's saying, as far as like it could be very possible and very easy for Apple to be like, nah, like you guys want to do your own thing. You want to make your own money. Like, we're not going to host you. People can still download the app. They can download it through another app store, or they can download it through like whatever it's going to be. But you know, there's something, and like, that's when the developer of the app will kind of have to decide like, okay, is it worth kind of playing with Apple's rules? Because there's a benefit to being on the Apple store, right? Like that's still, there's no way there's no way people are going to be like pivoting away from it that hard if other stuff pops up. The vast majority of people will still go to the App Store. And like, there are plenty of times when like, I'll just look at what the top 20 apps are or something, right? Or the top, or like top gaming apps. And it's like, if you see Spotify as the number one music app on the App Store, that makes you more likely to download it if you're someone who maybe doesn't have like a designated music app, or if you want to try something different. But if Spotify doesn't even have a presence, like that's a large majority, like the vast majority of Apple users who are now not going to see that option. And some people might just assume that like, oh, it must not exist anymore. You know what I mean? Like, so at a certain point, it will behoove developers to work with Apple if Apple chooses to retaliate like that.
Or we get into the world of, where's that game? It's on Epic. You know, like the game just flew out. Blades of Fire. A game coming out this summer that I really want to play. By the folks who did Metroid Dread. And I'm embarrassed to admit this, I spent far too long searching Steam for it. Like, it must be a generic. Why can't I find it? And I read it. I'm like, it definitely comes out in June or whenever it is. Like, why can't I add it to a wish list? I want to keep track of it. It's like, oh, the Epic Game Store.
Yeah.
Epic Games. It's like, for a day, I just thought it wasn't coming out because it's not on Steam. Must not be coming out. Nope. It's not on the store I use.
And something I always try to like remind myself too is like, and because like I'll do stuff like that too, right? And like, we are the people who are supposed to be quote unquote like experts, right? Like, this is our job in our industry. And if we're already finding certain things kind of convoluted, or it's like naming conventions for consoles. I always joke with people. I'm like, that stuff confuses the people who have to write about it. Like, of course it's going to confuse like the random, you know, mom who walks in who's trying to get a new system and is like, okay, well, why is that Series X and that's Series S, but that's a one? You know what I mean?
So, yeah, you're
like,
right.
This is stuff that like for most consumers, like it's confusing and convoluted. And so,
yeah,
you know, it's right now this decision seems like a win for the middle guy. We'll see what it's like for the little guys, because that's really where it's going to,
it's a huge win for the big guys, right? The Fortnites of the world, the Spotify's of the world, the people that don't need the App Store to surface them because they already have mind share, you know, and the upshot is it sounds like Fortnite is returning to iOS, And will have the ability to, you know, purchase all your stuff right through Epic. So, you know, it's a massive win for the big guys. And I think you're right, for the medium guys and maybe for the little guys too. But I think what about the end user? I'm concerned that there's going to be some ramifications to this that aren't all positive, and it's a bummer that that's true. Interesting stuff, though. Very, very interesting. And we'll keep our tabs on it. And it's interesting, too, Christian, as you pointed out, that this is a huge change to the App Store that comes from gaming, right? It's going to impact Spotify. It's going to impact Patreon and Cameo and lots of other things that don't have anything to do, you know, on the surface with gaming. But it's because Epic and Fortnite wanted it to happen and fought for it. Fascinating. All right. Well, my story of the week is the big one that we have to talk about. You guys have given me no choice because it is my turn to say.
Jeff was right.
Yes, that's right. In my prediction episode way back in 2024. Do you guys remember old Diggity Diggity 24? We were all so young and bright-eyed, and we didn't know anything. We expected Grand Theft Auto 6 to come out in 2025. Well, somebody
did we?
I came out hard and said no, that's not going to happen. And I'm sure a lot of people, but you know, at that time, Take-Two was insisting everything was on track. So it was a bolder prediction than one might expect. But
we
hey.
Just didn't zoom in enough. Only you zoomed in far enough to say on track to later delay it. You know, we really had to zoom in on their words.
It's easy to bet against a rock star release date. It's easy. And hey, this one might not even be the final release date, but I'm still going to hold to my guns and say I called it, and not everybody was calling it at that time. Anyway, Grand Theft Auto 6 got delayed. Everybody heard. May 26th, 2026 for Grand Theft Auto 6. A lot of sixes. May 26th, 2026. So it's not going to be a holiday game. Going to come out in the middle of the year, about a year from now, a little more than a year from now.
When the Xbox Series X will be $800.
Oh, no.
You will have to literally commit Grand Theft Auto to get it. Jessica, this is a titanic, seismic event in gaming, right? Everybody yes. was waiting for that GTA 6 release date. Everybody was worried that people were going to move out of the way of this beast, the 800-pound gorilla. It was coming. It was coming at the end of 2025. Who knew what date exactly? But everybody was waiting with bated breath. What does it mean that we now have May 26th of next year? Flag in the sand.
I'm relieved. It's so funny because I am not a big rock star person. But I always forget just how, like, I don't even have the words for, like, how big in scale and important these games are and, like, the impact they have on my industry as a writer and, like, our website. I mean, I guess it's part of me is like, oh, well, maybe it's not great because the traffic and stuff that websites generate when games like this come out is wild. Like, it is – that's the stuff that keeps all the writers at a place fed for the year. You know what I mean? Because people are constantly searching the pre-order guide, searching the, you know, how to do this mission, how to find this thing. Like, that is huge. But there is some relief. It's funny because I actually think about an interaction I had. I have a friend who works at Sony, and we do the whole like friendie thing where it's like, okay, we can't really talk about this, but let me know if you know something. I'll let you know if I know something. Right. And I had a friend who was like trying to figure out like a good timing for a preview event that they're doing for an upcoming Sony thing, and they were like, hey. Between us, do you know if Grand Theft Auto was doing anything around this time? Because we do not want to be around.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know anything. I'm like, personally, I have no idea. So as far as I know, you're good to do whatever you're doing. But it's like, that's how, like, even people at Sony are like, we don't want to get in on that. Like, we don't want to step on toes. We don't want to take up the same like real estate or like window of time. So, I mean, I'm kind of relieved that, you know, this year is going to be a bit more calm, and I'm not really surprised. You know, whenever we're like the beginning, we were talking about like the biggest news story. There was a part of me that was like, well, this is the biggest news story. Because yeah, it's just, it really is very big, but at the same time, is anybody really surprised? I would have been more surprised if it came out this year, to be completely honest, but it is a big story still.
Yes. I mean, I think my co-hosts on our prediction show are shocked, because if they had thought that, they would have made the prediction. But it took one bold – they call me the Canosticator for a reason, and I nailed it.
Jeff was right.
Oh, it happened again? It said it again? Anyway, Christian Spicer, Grand Theft Auto 6, May 26th. It gives a lot of publishers – a lot of heads up to sort of plan around it now. And I'm wondering if you think we'll see a real shift in how fall of 2025 plays out now that the floodgates are open. Anything is fair game.
Half-Life 3 is like, now's my time.
Silk Song, baby. Let's go.
Silk Song.
Now's my time.
Good. It's all clear. Team Cherry,
A few Rockstar games that have been delayed. Grand Theft Auto 3, Grand Theft Auto Vice City, Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, Grand Theft Auto 4, Grand Theft Auto 5, Red Dead Redemption 2. Just a few of the Rockstar games.
Yeah, they all get delayed.
Been delayed.
And again, nobody else predicted it on our show except this guy with the thumbs. That's all I'm saying.
Great prediction. And when you go back and prep it, you'll hear Lana and myself going, that's a great prediction. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm hopeful now that we'll actually get Metroid Prime 4's release date. You know, I'm hoping that we'll get release dates for games that were kind of announced to be this year that we don't have firm dates for yet. I think folks were speculating when Ghost of Yodi this past week kind of just came out with like a press release that is just like, hey, we're coming out in October. It was like, oh, that must mean because GTA is going to be, they're trying to get ahead of GTA. Yeah. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we get a Ghost to give our team a few more weeks of time. You know, maybe now it will be November, you know, or something like that. Like,
I think you're so right. Actually, you said that. I'm like, oh, it's going to happen. I think that's a
really Borderlands.
Did we say October 1st? Second, we meant it's November, baby. Come
November,
on.
November 14th. Yeah. We didn't even talk about the Borderlands 4 had its big thing, and it moved their release date up. Folks are like, oh, they're trying to get out of the way of GTA 6. Now Borderlands 4 is going to be like, never mind. We're scooting back again. So I think we'll see that. I think, you know, we'll get some release dates for things that haven't had release dates. And I'm really – now everybody's like, May, son of a – you know, 2026 because – Now it's the whole game again, right? They just literally moved the goalposts, and now everybody's shuffling what their 2026 is going to look like. Man, Jessica, how many games are coming out in February 2026 now? You know, just to be ahead of a potential GTA.
Well, that's the other thing Game of the Year is wide open, right? Because it felt like this game probably, even though nobody has played it, it still felt like a pretty safe front runner for getting some flowers at the end of the year. Right?
It's one of the shoes. And like at the very least, like at every single outlet or any sort of like voting like committee or whatever, like that's going to be a game that people are going to play. Because if you are voting for something or writing about something and you haven't played that, like, you got to play it. So, I mean, that's time that, like, let's say by the time that December comes around or November, I'm always like, oh my gosh, okay, like, what are the games that I need to play before we start doing our deliberations, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, when you have a big game like that is going to eat up, like, maybe I haven't played Blueprints, right? Like, that would have been the time that I would have played that. But if something like Grand Theft Auto comes out, that's going to take all of the time that I would have given smaller games. So it definitely does help every game that is gunning for Game of the Year this year.
Guess who's going to be back-to-back Game Awards Most Anticipated Game of the Year award winner, though, now.
Yeah. Yeah. Shoe in.
You're like, run it back, baby.
I also think it's very funny how many times we got news stories of Take-Two executives being like, no, no, we're set for fall, baby. No problems. Everything's smooth sailing.
Every single conference call was like that. Like, I don't do too much of the businessy stuff, but like there are sometimes that I'll like hop on and I'll listen to like the Take-Two calls that they're doing. And like every single, and like granted, that's their job, right? Their job is to convince all of the shareholders who are listening that everything is peachy and good. And
yeah.
But it's like with so much confidence, like, yep, we are all set for our fall 2025 release date. Like this will be the big money making Q3 type. And it's like,
game's done now. We could put it out today if we wanted to. We're just going to hold on to it until fall, you know? It's everything's so good. It's just so good.
Me, lies. Whenever I'm like, you know, was writing professors in college, like it's I could have it today, but it would be better if you gave me an extra week.
Yeah. I mean, it's very funny. Evidently, they had a specific email sent to just the shareholders of Take-Two assuaging their fears. But it's like, you're going to make your money. Just hold on a little longer, baby. You know, you're going to make your money. Yeah. Big deal. Huge deal. And I wild think, that, you know, that it's going to be another year before Grand Theft Auto 6. But I'm sure when it arrives, it will be just as big as ever.
I think a little positive thing to note with that story, too, really quick, is some people, the first thing is people are like, oh, well, it's great because they're avoiding crunch. And then you have the people who are more cynical and who are like, no, there's no way. They're just going to be crunching for longer. But also, I think that Jason Schreier, and forgive me if it was a different reporter, basically said like, hey, no, actually, I have been keeping tabs on Take-Two because of their history with crunch. And genuinely, like from everybody that I've talked to, they are not crunching. And it seems like they're taking things a lot more seriously. So, you know, positive note. Like, it seems like the game is being made more ethically, and like this time will hopefully allow for a more polished experience where people are working and happy. So,
agreed. I think that if that turns out to be the case, then bravo. I love that a company would be willing to take the hit, push the game back. And if any company has the clout to say, nope, not going to happen, we're waiting, it would be Rockstar and this game. So if that's the way they're choosing to use their clout, then I will applaud that. And I think it's great that you brought it up, Jessica. Yes. If that's really the case, then great on them for doing it that way. All right. I'm going to take a quick break for a sponsor. We'll be right back with one more story, and then we're going to get into our playlist. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace! We love Squarespace, Christian. Squarespace makes us look like web designers.
No, that was all me. All my hard work. Hours of just coding and analyzing code and recode and taking, like, you know, dipping a pencil on my tongue.
Oh, yeah. That's a key process. Yeah. When you build a website, you got to dab the pencil tip to the tongue, or else how do you know you're designing something?
You sharpen it with like a knife, you know, because you're building it by hand, and it's labor. And I come out and I'm sweaty. Like, I just played beach volleyball with a group of Air Force pilots in training. It's so hard, Jeff. So hard. I think
Christian has already proven he knows nothing about web design, but that's okay. No.
Well, then because how did I make DLCpod.com, Jeff, if I know nothing?
Squarespace, the all-in-one website platform that is designed to help you stand out and succeed online. That's whether you're just starting out or you're scaling your business, because Squarespace gives you everything you need to claim your domain, showcase your offerings with a professional website, grow your brand, and get paid all in one place. How do they do it? How do they do it, I hear you asking? Well, maybe when you build your website, you might want to use the new Squarespace Blueprint AI, an AI-enhanced website builder, to give you fully custom websites in just a few steps. You use basic information about your industry, your goals, your personality, and then it generates premium quality content and personalized design recommendations. Well, Squarespace also offers a complete library of professionally designed and award-winning website templates. So if you don't want to go the AI route, you got these templates with options for every use and category. No matter where you start, your website is flexible to what you need because you design it yourself. You can move things around, drag and drop editing, beautiful styling options, unrivaled visual design effects, and that on-brand AI content to give you more ways to list what you offer, no experience required. That's the key part to take away. Just like us, no experience required. And if you have a website, you're going to want a domain. And Squarespace's domains are the best way to get a domain. It's the way I've purchased all my domains. Squarespace domains makes it easy to find the best name for your business at one fair, all-inclusive price with no hidden fees, no add-ons required. Every Squarespace domain comes with advanced privacy and security tools included, so you know your domain remains online and protected. Plus, Squarespace provides everything you need to bring more of your dream to life, whether that means building your website or adding a professional email service. Don't wait to claim your name. Invest in your dream domain today. And how do you do that? Well, you use our promo code. First, you're going to head over to squarespace.com/DLC, which will save you 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. You use our promo code DLC. You can start building your website by going to squarespace.com/DLC. You don't even have to give them a credit card. You get it for free. Then when you save, when you want to check out, you'll save 10% off by using our promo code DLC. That's for domains. That's for your website service. Anything you need. Squarespace.com/DLC. 10% off with promo code DLC. All right, so there's one more story we need to bring up, and it's a sad one, but it certainly affects us and a lot of our friends. So many of the names and voices you've heard on this podcast have been associated with Giant Bomb, with Polygon, and both of those organizations suffered really devastating changes this week, layoffs or resignations, what I would term as corporate meddling on both in both cases. Polygon was sold and they basically laid off a huge number of huge percentage of the staff. Over 20 staff were laid off at Polygon. Changes there. Yet to be determined how that's going to all play out, but it certainly doesn't seem like a positive thing. And Giant Bomb evidently was involved in some real disagreement from their corporate overlords about what they called brand safety or something along those lines. And many of our friends who've been on the show, who we talk to a lot, Jeff Grubb, lots of our friends, Jan, many of the folks over there, no longer with Giant Bomb. Both of these are a huge hit. I know, Jessica, you had already sort of referenced this. It's a big deal for games journalism. It's a big deal for the coverage of games. And I'm sure you also have lots of friends and colleagues that are being affected. And it's a sad thing to note. And it feels like these two things both happening within, I think on the same day, I think it was the same day we got the news for both, feels like a real hit and a death knell for something. I don't want to say for all of games journalism, but it certainly feels dire to me.
It's hard. And to be completely transparent, because I don't know if people are super aware of like the connection between Giant Bomb and GameSpot, because we're owned by the same company. So I am a fandom employee. Like I am in the same Slack with all the Giant Bomb folks. Like we are all like, they're like coworkers, you know, like we are constantly coordinating stuff together. So like this was essentially stuff that was happening at my job over the course of a week and a half. Where I didn't know which of my coworkers I was still working with and what was happening exactly. But like I said, to be trans, I can't talk about it too much because of that. Yeah. There's just a lot of sensitivity around everything right now. And the people
that,
who
yes.
are still there, who are still working out, who is actually going to be staying and what things look like. But it's hard, you know, it's very difficult. Lots of like uncertainty. And it's, as someone who, I mean, when I first started at GameSpot, we were owned by Red Ventures. And that was shortly after we were sold to Red Ventures by CBS. And then within a year of me starting there, we were sold to Fandom. And I think since I started in 2020, it would have been December 2021, we've gone through like three or so rounds of layoffs. So like layoffs every year. And it's hard because, of course, like the people who are laid off are the ones who are more impacted by everything. But it also destabilizes everything. I mean, like, just imagine, it's just the same as any workplace, especially, you know, I know with everything going on with government jobs this year, it's been surreal to see so many of my friends who, like, I have friends who work for the IRS, or I have friends who work like at Pfizer, right? But who have government contracts. And I have never seen my friends worry about job security as much as they have since everything started this year. And it's, I hate to say funny because it's not funny. It's really sad, but it reminds me of like my industry, right? And now it's like everybody is just constantly freaking about stability and job security and like where, like, is your next paycheck good, right? Because
yeah,
this stuff can just be pulled out of from under you. But yeah, there's just a lot of trauma that comes from enduring layoffs and constantly thinking, am I on the chopping block? Like, who's next?
Yeah.
And the stuff with Polygon too is just absolutely devastating. There are a lot of top tier, incredible reporters, to where it's just frankly unfathomable that they would be unemployed. Like when you start, when you're scrolling through Blue Sky or Twitter and you're seeing, you know, this person who has 20 plus years of experience in the industry, who is someone who is hosting events at E3, who is, you know, hanging out with Hideo Kojima, is like, hey, I'm looking for work. It's like, what? Like the people, like, how do you have any hope for people who are starting out when like, these are the people who can't hold on to a job right now? You know, so just upsetting all around.
Yeah, it is, of course, so much institutional knowledge lost with folks that have been, you know, doing it and doing it well and doing it the right way for so long. As I said, so many friends, so many personalities that have come through for us and been on the show. I mean, it's a who's who of former guests of our show. It's people we respect and value quite a lot, so much so that we ask them to be part of this. It's hard to see, and ultimately it makes for worse content, if you can use that word, for gamers to have these voices that are trying to steer their dollars in the right direction. Christian, you know, the reaction that I had immediately, and I know that you did as well, is to feel extremely grateful that we have direct support from our audience to continue doing what we do, that we have patrons that value our show enough to keep it going. And a lot of the folks that have been laid off, I'm sure will have to find some way to get direct support for if they hope to continue their excellent work. And we certainly wish them the best, but I do think it is a loss to think that some of these, you know, corporate owned entities can't seem to keep going. I think we're losing something. I mean, we saw Polygon has been sold to Valnet, and I saw this on Blue Sky. Chris Grant, who is the founding editor-in-chief of Polygon, said on Blue Sky, quote, there, meaning Valnet's press release, proudly calls Polygon a premium gaming publication, but Valnet literally refused to meet with me or answer a single question of mine throughout this process. They were wildly incurious about how a gaming publication even becomes premium. It doesn't feel like these things are in good hands, and it really makes me sad. What is your reaction?
I'm glad it happened. No, just kidding. I scream from the top of the Empire State Building. Obviously, it's terrible, right? And you mentioned the lost institutional knowledge, but I also wanted to highlight something that Jessica said that I think is just as important. Not only are we losing the institutional knowledge and the folks that are able to do the great in-depth reporting or the large features because they're given time to work on something. And for all the features you read, 10 don't get there because the story falls apart or something like that. And having those types of companies that support that type of work make that possible. But what Jessica mentioned, I think is equally as important, is who recommends this career to someone now?
Yeah.
I remember coming up reading GamePro, EGM, yeah, reading Joystick back in the day. And just like, oh man, I wasn't only reading about the hobby I loved, I was reading great writing.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of making someone fall in love with this hobby and also want to pursue it professionally. It's not, oh, I can write 500 words for $10. And if I can do that in 30 minutes, I can do that 400 times in a day. I can eke out a living where I've eaten enough ramen, I'll be okay. Like, that's not the thing. Not only is that a crappy, SEO mill of a job, but it also doesn't treat the art with the respect that it deserves, the curiosity that it deserves, the wonder and artistry that it deserves. And we've had so many wonderful people who write or talk about this art in such beautiful ways, no longer be able to do that the way they were. And I think that is truly devastating for building up this industry to what it has become. And I think it's going to hamstring it in the future going forward. We've talked about this a little bit, some of it on the Wednesday show too, Jeff, but just the idea of like, I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you for letting me be here because I need to be here to be able to talk about the thing that I'm talking about. And I loved it and it was so good and everything's great. And this is so great and everything's great. And oh my God. And then I'm so grateful to be here. And this product is so great. Look how great this product is. Click my link to sell this product because this product's so great. It's just a crappy system of discourse around art. And I fear we're really teetering on the edge of it right now. And it sucks. It sucks real bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the takeaway, if you're listening to this and you care about voices that you care about, support them. Support them as directly as you can. Again, we are grateful for the folks that sustain us at patreon.com/DLCpod. And any creator that has a way for you to support them directly will be grateful for it. So if there are voices that you value, value it. Show that you value it with your dollars. That's really the best way to make things survive.
Even sharing it. If you someone you love works at Washington Post or IGN or GameSpot, or you read this article that really sticks with you, share it. Talk about it. Let that person know. Let those folks know that this is work that matters to you and isn't just some SEO AI slop put together to trick people into clicking on it,
Yeah.
That's, we're at a point, or at least like rapidly kind of approaching a breaking point. And my hope is that, I feel like I've always been more idealistic and hopeful just as a person in general. And I, at the end of the day, genuinely believe that like humans want to be a part of a society where they are interacting with art and other people and ideas and meaning. And I think that at a certain point, the push towards slop and AI slop generated stuff, stuff that is just churned out, without much care or thought, like people are going to reach a breaking point, and they're going to navigate away from whatever site is doing that or whatever, you know, I don't know. So I hope hope and have faith. Yeah, I have faith in people. Don't prove me wrong, people. I mean, I feel like already if you're subbing and you're listening, you're doing your part, right? And you're supporting the media that you love, listener.
Yeah, but anybody that's listening to this show is already awesome.
Exactly.
And has already made great life choices.
But I have faith in people. I am hoping that we'll reach a breaking point and things will shift back. Everything is a pendulum. That's what I have to remind myself in the midst of everything that's happening politically, everything that's happening in this country. I just have to remind myself it's a pendulum. Things will swing back. I try to have faith that there are a lot of good people, you know, who are welcoming, accepting, loving, who appreciate art and writing. And like, Christian, I love what you said, just because it was very like heartfelt. And yeah, we are losing a lot of the heart and the humanity in this industry. And I'm holding out hope. I have to. So
holding up for a hero to the end of the night.
I remember I talked to basically the leadership at a program called Girls Make Games. And they've been around for 11 years at this point. I've talked to them a few times. And one of the last times that I spoke to them, we talked about the increase in like harassment and people attacking DEI games and woke games. Also on top of that, just like the industry and how volatile things are. And, you know, I remember asking, like, how do you encourage these like 12-year-old girls who are at this coding camp who all they want to do is make games? I see these little girls and I'm just like, oh, my heart breaks for them because like I want them to dream big. And, you know, you want to see them succeed, but it feels like everybody is so set up to fail. It's kind of like, you know, like I talked to the woman who was running the camp and she's like, honestly, like they kind of inspire me and keep me in check because if there's a will, there's a way. Like these girls are going to make these games. Like they are, you know, like they know that it's hard and they are aware of all of this. All kids are always more aware than what adults think, right? And they know, but they're the ones who are like, yeah, but it's like, we'll figure it out. Like we'll make it work. I want to learn these things. Like, you know, I have the great, like, it's going to be hard. And they even have women who are like fresh out of college who did the program. And like, they're like, oh my gosh, the market's hard, blah, blah, blah. But there's like that perseverance and that real love. And when you have that real love and there are enough people who have that, like things will be okay. It's hard, but things, you know, will swing back. I have faith.
Well, I would like to believe you're right. So let's hope you are. The other thing that a number of people pointed out that I think is an astute observation is if you don't have any faith in your video game website on the eve of what is going to be the biggest video game console launch of all time, mm-hmm. what are you even doing? You know what I mean? Like literally the Switch 2 is about to drop and it's going to sell more units than any console has ever sold. At least that's the projection right now. It seems like the time for video game websites to thrive. Not the other way around. So, all right. On that note,
at least GTA 6 is still coming out this year.
Yeah.
Meh.
Let's talk about some games that have come out and that we have played in a segment we call The Playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on The Playlist. Jessica, what is on your playlist at the moment?
Ooh, so I have been kind of no-lifing, but like I also have a 3-year-old, so I really I'm not afforded no-lifing anymore. But when I can, Clair Obscur, like constantly, you know, my kid in. It's so good. It's so funny because I ended up like I originally thought that for GameSpot I was going to do the review, and so I remember like kind of waiting for that code to drop, and you know, we ended up, like, somebody else took it because I had other projects going on, but I ended up getting a code also early for it. But because I wasn't doing the review, I was like, oh, I'm going to put it off. Like, I'm sure I'm going to like this game, but I'm going to put it off. I'm going to put it off. I played like half an hour of it. And then all the reviews came out and they were all glowing. I'm like, oh my gosh, why did I put that off? I need it. So since then I have just been like full steam ahead playing it. I'm like probably close to 40 hours at this point. Wow. And it is phenomenal. Like, I am shocked. I mean, I don't want to say shocked because, like, they seemed like the team seemed competent. All of the demos seemed competent, but, like, it is just wildly good.
Yeah, I agree. And Christian's so French, right?
Oui, oui.
We had a whole conversation about that on the paid show. But no, you've been playing more of it. I've been playing more of it. It's just, I think, so well made from top to bottom. Any additional insights from you, Christian, about your additional playtime with it?
I think what I've found really rewarding about it, and a great turn-based game does this, so Clair Obscur is not alone in this, but I think it does it really well, is how it paces out your abilities and squad and how those things link up. I think, Jeff, you talked about on last week's main show, which I agreed with. I think you're the one that said this, how, like, sometimes the UI implies you can do something, but you can't quite do it yet. It's like, you can do this thing at camp. And I'm like, sweet, time to go to camp. And it's like,
You can beat certain enemies and it'll be like, hey, this is for that. And you're like, I don't know anything about that yet.
Yeah, I can't do that. So, like, that's the nit of it. But the positive is, as your crew grows and you start to see all of those pieces come together of a battle, and it's like, oh, you know, and it's like the Beautiful Mind meme of, like, you literally see, it's like, oh, if I do this and set this up, okay, well, if I can successfully parry three times, okay, oh, I just need two parries. And it's so rewarding to pull that off and set up your little domino of how your character's powers are going to interact with each other. And I think it's really interesting how, and I'm not as far into it as you are, Jessica, but I also think it's interesting how my competency seems to have risen as much as my level, if that makes sense, versus a game where you're kind of level gated the whole way. And I feel like I'm becoming better and not just my characters, which is super fun.
I completely agree. It's so funny that you say that because when I started the game, I started on expedition mode, which is like medium. Cause I'm usually like I play FromSoft games. Like, I'm like, I have decent reflexes. I can do this. And I started playing and I'm like, this game is kind of brutal. Like, I have a 3-year-old. I am doing, you know, playing games for work. Like, I just want to get through this and just enjoy my time and not be frustrated and replaying bosses. So, like, I put it down on the easy mode. Okay, I'm coming out and I'm saying it. Put it on the easy mode. And I played on easy mode for a while. And I realized, like, being on the easy mode, it doesn't mean like your parry window or anything is like any wider. Like, you still have the same window. It's just stuff does less damage, whatever. And I was getting really good at parrying everything and like building up and like my timing. I was like, okay, like, I feel like I'm pretty. And I bumped it up and I realized, like, oh, this is like easy. I can play on hard now. And like, I still feel okay because, like, the game trains you as you grow, as your characters grow, you also grow as a player. You know, and so I went from being someone who was, I don't want to say annoyed because I appreciated what it was doing with its combat and with, you know, having to actually hit the buttons and have those quick reflexes. But I went from someone who was like, kind of like, I don't really care. Kind of frustrating. I just want to play, experience the story, to like, I'm in it. And I'm like sitting here thinking about builds for my characters and stuff too. And you can do, like, you wouldn't think of a turn-based RPG as being like, oh, I want to make the number go up and like experiment and, you know, get weird with it. But you really, like, I have a friend who I think just hit 300,000 damage in like a match that he was able to do because of like equipping Mael with certain Lumina skills and like having it to where, like, you know, you can make this character take damage. And then when they take damage, like, it stacks percentages. And then also if you have like, they can take burn damage, and it's really weird. Like, all the stuff that you can do, and so inventive, and
yeah,
I love it. It's just a very creative title.
Yeah, the amount of character crafting that you can do, you know, applying the skills and the Lumina, what's the things that you earn that you can after you learn them and then you have them. What's the name of that? They call it.
Oh, it was the Lumina. You got it.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, it's awesome how much you can craft your party to behave in certain ways. And I think all of it is not done the way that other games do it. It's really figured out to have the game has its own identity from top to bottom. And that's one of the things I love about it is it feels so fresh and interesting, even though it's playing on sort of established tropes. It's just a delight. Expedition 33, Clair Obscur. We're all fans.
My last point. It's also very dark.
Yeah. But also like, funny.
It's pretty funny.
I haven't finished it. So I feel like maybe there is light at the end of this tunnel. But I mean, it really lets you wallow in it.
Like I said, ennui. It's the French. It's full of ennui. But it also like has moments of real comedy, right? It's trying to be funny frequently. And I think
I'm shocked by how funny it is. Like I'm glad that you said that because apparently the writing was all mostly done by one woman and like, it's fantastic. Like it's so conversational without being like, how do you do fellow kids? Right. Like it's very natural writing. It's very funny. It's very, charming. I really do like it. I think it's very impressive.
It is. It doesn't feel like a video game. It's beautiful. And it sounds like we're getting a film adaptation. So that could be cool too. All right, Jessica, what else is on your playlist?
Only other thing that I've also been dabbling in is some Overwatch 2 Stadium mode. They just introduced it, I think, about a week ago. And it is it's a very different way of playing Overwatch. They're calling it like the third pillar of the series because you have quick play, you have competitive, which essentially the same game, just one is, you know, not competitive and one is. But yeah, Stadium mode is an entirely new beast. And if you are someone who kind of fell off of the Overwatch bandwagon and you're looking for a time to get back into it, I highly recommend playing it. It is a little bit absurd, but also so strategic and fun and fast paced. I don't know. I love it.
That's great. So it's gotten you back into Overwatch. I know that was the goal. It was like the new shiny thing to get folks to sort of move away from Marvel Rivals and their old friend Overwatch, them back to the table.
They have Emma Frost now, so I don't know how much it's going to work.
Fair enough. The old white queen.
Yeah.
What's the elevator pitch for Stadium? I'd heard about it. I'm deeply fallen off of Overwatch and Overwatch 2. So what is like the broad pitch for Stadium versus the mode we've all been playing forever now?
Yeah, so Stadium, it is a roster of 18 characters right now. And essentially, think of something more like Dota, where you know, like you buy it's you have a skill tree. So you start off with a certain amount of money, or even Valorant is a good example too. You have a certain amount of money at the match start, and you can pick different upgrades for your character, and that will impact, you know, like for instance, let's say you're playing Cassidy, right? You can choose to make it to where like each time he gets a kill, his ultimate charges 15%, and every time that he pops his ultimate, like you have 25% increased movement, and you know everybody like it's just all these random perks. So it's basically tinkering with a bunch of little knobs on all of these characters, and some of them are like Reaper can fly is like one of the things that he eventually gets, and it makes it this very strategic and kind of just over the top way of playing with characters that you already know in very specific tailored versions of themselves. You know, you can choose to go all in on offense or all in on defense, all in on, you know, I want this person to like, I want my D.Va to be an absolute tank. Maybe I'm not going to increase like her damage and stuff like that, but I'm going to make her health just absolutely ridiculous, increase like barrier stuff. They even bring back like old ults that they used to, you know, like trying to think, I think like Orisa, right, used to have like that shield that they got rid of, but they brought it back because you can make her very shield heavy in Stadium.
That's cool.
So yeah, it's a really unique experience that allows you to play all of these characters, like I said, just in different ways. It mm-hmm. reinvents the game in some ways.
That's cool.
Awesome. Well, Christian, before we get to your playlist, I just wanted to give you a little quick update. The Game 7 score is gone final.
I have a parting gift coming up. It's okay.
It's gone final. I just want to say 103-89 Warriors. Ah. Actually, you know what? I'm going to need a second to process all that to just revel in the win. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Christian's playlist right after this. This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. So I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark. All right, Christian Spicer, I know that you have been playing Expedition 33 a bunch. Assassin's Creed Shadows you're still working on, but there's something else. Maybe you got a little want a little tease? Want to do a little tease?
Well, I'm allowed to say I have Doom the Dark Ages in my possession, and the embargo for that is May 9th at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. I will have an embargo review out at christianspicer.substack.com, but more importantly, we will have an in-depth discussion on our Sunday, May 11th, show of this year, very show, because Jeffrey, I know you are also gonna the Dark Ages it.
We will be dooming it up, Doom Bros. Yeah, doomed. So stay tuned.
Doomed to be Doom Bros.
Yeah. Yeah, wish we could talk about it now. Can't
talk about it now.
It's like they gave us some sort of spiked shield that we need to. I don't know.
I was going
to
say embargo is the word I was thinking of.
Oh, or, yeah, embargo. You can call your
what
shield
is an
whatever
embargo
you want,
if
man.
Not a spiked shield, right?
All right, I want to talk about one more game that is on my playlist. This is a big surprise for me. This is not a game that was on my radar very much. I think I'd seen a trailer for it. It looked cool, but I'm really impressed. What a year, 2025. We don't need no Grand Theft Auto 6. We got game after game after game that is really excellent. We already talked about Clair Obscur and Assassin's Creed Shadows and Blueprints. And so just like the list goes on and on and on. It's been a crazy, amazing year with all these Game of the Year candidates. I got another game. I don't know if it's Game of the Year, but it's certainly a real worthwhile game if you want to check it out, especially if you have Game Pass. And this game is still in early access. It's called Towerborn. And I have really been enjoying my time with it so far. Christian, this game is like a love letter to the games that you and I grew up with, like Golden Axe, side-scroller beat-em-ups, Double Dragon, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Simpsons. It's that kind of game done with modern multiplayer sensibilities. And it's really good. I'm really digging Towerborn. This is on Game Pass. That's how I'm playing it. It's in early access.
It's an Xbox Game Studios published game. Yeah. So not only is it on Game Pass, it's like, Xbox moneyed behind.
Right. Yeah. And it's in early access. So, there's a lot that could potentially change before it's 1.0. But I think it's very strong already. First of all, beautiful. Really, really gorgeous game, in my opinion. I dig the art direction here. It's very bright, colorful, cartoonish in the best possible way. Vibrant, beautiful, painterly backgrounds and really wonderfully animated bad guys and main characters. It's got this sort of cel-shaded look to it. I really, really like how it looks. And you can play any of the classes at any time, switch between them at any time. I think there's four, if I'm remembering correctly, right now. Four or five? I should know that. Anyway, you can switch between them at any time. You level them up individually. So even though you can switch between them, you may have leveled, you know, if you play one a long time, you're going to switch to another. You'll be back level one at that that other class. And that means you can't wear gear that's level three or five or eight or whatever it is if you're a level one in that other class. So, you know, a lot of this is kind of grindy. That would be my only negative to say about Towerborn, is that it feels like it could potentially be pretty grindy in that you can repeat a lot of the levels over again, and you could do it on multiple classes of the same character. But it's always fun if you like that very sort of button mashy side scroller, you know, Golden Axe style combat, which I do. You know, Castle Crashers is a more modern example of it. But I really enjoy it. And I think, you know, I said button mashy, but it's not, I would say Towerborn does a lot of things to mitigate that. While you can sort of just, you know, bash your way through lots of enemies, you end up getting a lot of skills and unlocks and special attacks that make for some very sophisticated combos and some very sophisticated ways to move through a level. And I really appreciate that. It is a level up from those old games in that it's not just, you know, jump and attack. It's not just light attack, heavy attack. You've got all kinds of really cool things. In fact, you've got this sort of Pokemon-esque little nymph-like character that you can swap in and swap out. You'll loot new ones.
Nintendo's listening, he doesn't mean like really Pokemon-esque.
I said esque.
Yeah, it's not. You don't throw a ball to capture it, so it's cool.
No,
you
know, yeah. Esque is totally different. Legally defensible separation. That's the.
It's more of like a Digimon. It's a Digimon esque. You know, totally different.
It's a adorable little fairy thing that hovers over your shoulder, and you can help you attack things. And each of them has a different special thing that they can do. So that's one thing that's more than just hacking and slashing, but also, you get these sort of swap in and swap outable skills. And one of the cool things is anytime you sort of have, you know, you level up and you get these skill points and you can use them to spend on the skills that you want. But if you deselect that skill, you get refunded those skill points immediately. So it lets you swap things in and out. And that's one of the cool things, is that you can constantly be changing classes, changing builds, changing loadouts. So it's very adaptable that way and customizable to a play style that you find. But ultimately, you're going from left to right, sometimes down, sometimes up, but mostly left to right through these stages. And you're beating up lots and lots of things, getting to big monsters that you're beating up. And you're doing it with friends. I mean, this is a game built around multiplayer, built around grouping up. There are many, many of the best quests are group required. You can't take them down unless you work in a group. And so the game is really built to be a communal experience, a party-based experience. I think it's really excellent. I mean, it feels like a, you know, a games as service type game, you know, your Destiny or your even an MMO type experience, but layered onto a very different play type. It's that old brawler beat 'em up thing. And I just think it works. The marriage of that old school kind of video game, like arcade game thing, with this very modern, very, you know, tried and true kind of multiplayer grindy, keep you coming back for more, for a new piece of loot, a new cool gear thing that you're trying, a new quest that you're trying to take down. Like marrying those two ostensibly disparate play styles together really works here in Towerborn. And it does it in a wrapping that is beautiful. That's a place I like being in with characters I like seeing. I can't overemphasize the animations. They're all so wonderful. And if you've played those types of games before, you know animations make up a lot of what is cool or not cool, because it shows when enemies are vulnerable, when you are doing an attack, how you are going to time it, where it's going to land. And I think all of that is done very, very well with Towerborn. I'm impressed with this game quite a lot. Highly recommended from me. And I want to play a lot more of it.
Just since you started like talking about it, I looked it up because I was like, I want to like check it. It really is like very beautiful looking. And I have Game Pass now, so I think I'm going to have to give it a whirl.
Yeah, check it out. I've been playing the class that I'm enjoying. The classes are not all super typical. There's like a sword and shield guy. Or gal, there's a double dagger kind of rogue-esque, but then the other two are this kind of pyro staff wielding character, and then the one that I've been playing the most is this class that just wears enormous like Hulk fists on its hands, like those enormous kid Hulk fists that they sell in stores. It's that, and you just pummel things with these gigantic fists on your hand. And I've been enjoying that quite a lot. It's very fun.
Those Hulk fists now cost $200, though.
Yeah,
they were at stores. So.
They were made in Wakanda. So it's, they were tariffing even fictional places. So anyway, that's Towerborn, and it's on Game Pass, and it's well worth playing even in early access, I would say. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Jessica Cogswell, so much fun chatting with you. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me. It was so wonderful getting to chat with both of you.
Where can folks keep up with you and all the cool stuff that you do online?
You can find me over on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at A Wild Jessachu.
I love that.
It's very hard to like say that handle with a straight face. Like I'll try to in professional settings, and I'm like, oh, should it be more professional? I'm like, but my industry, are we the most professional? I don't know. It's a Pikachu reference. It's fine. And yeah, I work over at GameSpot, so you can catch my writing over there.
Fantastic. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
I'm also on Blue Sky, Christian Spicer. You can find this show on Blue Sky as DLC Hype Train. I think I already said what I'll be doing this week when I discussed when an embargo is up for next week's show.
Christian's going to hell this week.
For next week's show. I write a conversational newsletter about games that I've been bad at getting this most recent one out. But you can find it at christianspicer.substack.com. Things got hectic here for the last little bit, but I'm still toiling away at the one about why I don't replay my favorite games. And I want to get an embargo review out for Doom as well. Jeff, other than the summer movie wager episode going live for the plebs.
Oh, yeah.
What else is going on over at Filmcast? What else you got going on?
Big deal. Well, we're the summer has started. Yes, the Summer Movie Wager episode happened. You can go to thesummermoviewager.com and track our guesses at what's going to be the highest grossing top 10 movies of the summer in order. That's a lot of fun. And then, of course, the summer starts now because the first Marvel movie is hit and Thunderbolts. I got to say, if you haven't been digging Marvel movies lately, things might be turning around. Let's just put it that way. Check out our Thunderbolts review at Filmcast, wherever you get podcasts. I also do a comedy science show called We Have Concerns. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. And of course, I've been very grateful for the folks that have donated to the fundraising effort that I'm doing for the Providence Cancer Institute. You can find that at runjeffrun.com. We're really trying to get to that $20,000 goal for cancer research. Every single penny, I see none of it, but every single penny helps me on my quest to do the Hood to Coast Marathon, where we're running 200 miles as I said marathon, I meant relay. It's a relay. I'm not running all 200, but I'll be there all 200, and I'll be awake all 36 plus hours of it. No sleep for me. It's just be running at 3 o'clock in the morning. And you can make that worthwhile by supporting a great cause at runjeffrun.com. All right, let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Jessica, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
Yeah, my suggestion is, if you are going to turn away from screens, which I highly recommend people do, get your hands dirty now that it's summertime. I did some gardening this past weekend. I have a three-year-old, and we planted some daffodils, and I planted some basil, got a little herb garden going on, and wow. It was so relaxing. Also books. I'm a huge reader. That's like my number one thing I do outside of games is reading. So I'm currently working on the Throne of Glass series right now, which is real good. And it's finished too. So if you're one of those people who's like, I don't want to start a big long series because it's going to take forever, it's not finished. It's 7 books. So it's still pretty long, but it's really, really good. Highly recommend.
Excellent. Love that. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
Well, for my parting gift, I just want people to know how kind and selfless and genuine of a person Jeff Cannata is. I mean, people might not know this, but this show, with the addition of our guest wonderfully contributing and donating their time and being here every week and such an important part of the show, but it is truly just Jeff and I. And when I say that, I mean just Jeff. Jeff actually records my side of the show as well. He's a wonderful voiceover artist. He actually does my voice. He does his voice, all of the show prep. He actually emails me my 5 favorite games of the year before we record that episode. He makes all of my predictions. So all those years, people are like, oh, Spicerdomus, your predictions are so great. I feel good to finally get this off my chest. Those have been Jeff. He gives me the good predictions and saves all the terrible ones for himself, except for this year, I guess. He saved them for himself. He actually makes the games I play. I don't know if people know that, but he develops the games that I play. And not only that, but if you go and rewatch it, Jeff is the reason why the Dodgers won the World Series last year. He ran out into the outfield and got, who's actually still, you know, in the stands, but he just yelled, "Drop it, Judge," right at the right moment. Aaron Judge dropped the ball. He yelled, "Run, Mookie," when Mookie was running. He's like, "You can beat it." And Mookie heard him, you know, like the only voice you hear. Jeff is the only voice you hear in a crowd. He motivates you every day to do the right thing. He is my alarm clock. And I don't mean I have his voice set as my alarm clock. Just knowing that Jeff is counting on me gets me up every morning. And, you know, I'm actually not married. I just pretend to be because I want Jeff to think more of me.
I love, I know that he's such a great, started so flattering, and then it turned into Jeff like Truman showing you.
Yeah, I've become a very dark force in the universe somehow.
No, just the best. And when Luke was able to blow up the Death Star, it was because of Jeff. Mm-hmm. I just want to thank Jeff for all he's done. And being the best of us.
Well, I would like to thank the Golden State Warriors for making this little moment of Christian's finally admitting the truth happen.
Feels so good to say it, finally. Yeah. After 11 years or whatever I got there. Finally say that. Also, a new Wonder Woman comic is starting on May 14th, written and illustrated by Sophie Campbell. And she's great.
Oh, I thought you were going to say
Wonder
me.
Woman. Supergirl. Supergirl. Not Wonder Woman's already happening. A new Supergirl comic starts May 14th.
Written and illustrated by me. I thought you were
going to. Oh, yeah, by Jeff. Again, by Jeff. Jeff mails Sophie the pages and says, you can put your name on this because he's so generous.
Somehow our wager about being having to be nice to someone just turned into like tell lies about them, which is,
no.
I don't think the same thing.
No, but... no, it's the same. To say you said be nice, how else could I?
Well, my parting gift is how could I? That's very funny. My parting gift is a show on Netflix. I haven't talked about this before, Christian, right? I didn't check the if I brought it up yet. I don't think I have. I really like it. It's called The Residence. I think a different person brought it up as a parting gift, but I'm gonna underscore it because I finally got around to watching it. It's very fun. I was very reluctant to try this one because it takes place in the White House, and I was like, I don't want to see things taking place in the White House, right? I don't want this sort of fictional competent White House to just make me feel worse about the real world. But it's really good. It's really fun. It's a whodunit. It's like the world's greatest detective, a Benoit Blanc, a Sherlock Holmes, a Hercule Poirot, if you will.
A Jeff Cannata, you might say.
Exactly. The world's greatest of anything. Everything. But it's a new character, and she's amazing. It's really funny and fun. It's a comedy. This is a comedy. It's a comedy whodunit, which is great. And it's almost got a 30 Rock kind of sensibility to it, where it's got a lot of cutaway jokes and one-liners. But it's also like a serious whodunit, which is a fun thing to marry together. So I really like it. It's on Netflix. It's called The Residence. Give it a shot. We got a listener suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It comes from Sean. Sean says, I had a few quick recommendations for a couple of games. A Karate Survivor, which is a Vampire Survivors like, where you play an action scene from a Jackie Chan-esque movie. The skills you gain are color-coded and get slotted into a film reel that scrolls through every few seconds, and you get bonuses from having the same colors adjacent to each other. The coolest part is the stages are littered with objects that your character will interact with when you get near them, chairs, bottles, plates, etc. You instantly launch them at nearby enemies, and the animation is so seamless. Second, I'd like to recommend Death Road Tournament. What if Slay the Spire and the board game Thunder Road Vendetta had a baby? It has some cool mechanics. One is gear shifting, where you can play some cards that can raise or lower your gear. Higher gears give you extra bonuses from certain cards. Another mechanic is called handling, that you use to pay for your cards that you play. If you hit zero, you skid, and the cards get played automatically based on what gear you're at and the move that, and then they move you around the map. It plays fine on the Steam Deck, but you have to use the trackpads, and the icons are small. Thank you, Sean. Again, those two recommendations are Karate Survivor and Death Road Tournament. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on our show, send it to us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Jessica Cogswell and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those fun bumpers. Our theme song was composed by White Cube, which is Jason Sherry and T. Ryan Arnold. You can always get merchandise for our show by visiting our store at store.dlcpod.com. Of course, our biggest thanks are always reserved for our patrons at patreon.com/dlcpod. Thank you, patrons. Without you, we would not be here. So thank you very, very much. All right. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.